Hi everyone, it's Tom Panos here. I've got Andrew Sorensen with me. This is a raw interview. He's literally walked in 30 seconds ago into the room, and we're going to talk about how this guy is. He's going to be speaking at ARIC 2014. I'm really pumped and excited because this guy here is a good operator. Raynon Hall, Chumhaven?
Correct.
Okay, so Andrew, just give me your background to real. How long have you been in real estate?
Thanks for the intro, Tom. 12 years now. This year is my 12th year in real estate. I've been in the same office now for going on 10 years.
Okay, so same office 10 years. You started off as a salesman there?
Yes, started off as a salesman, progressed to a sales manager, got the opportunity to buy into the business, which I did, and then my business partner retired, and now I own the whole lot.
Okay, you still sell and list yourself?
Predominantly, yeah, I love it. I'm never going to give that away.
Yeah.
It's the bit I love, getting the deals together, working with people and making clients happy.
Okay, you definitely caught my eye because Brioni, that works for News Limited here,
yep,
said to me, you've got to watch this guy. Andrew has come in and we're doing heaps of pages of advertising.
Yep.
Out of all of a sudden, this office is firing.
Yep.
What is it that makes you so good at being an attraction agent? You write good numbers, don't you? I mean,
well over 100 sales a year.
Over 100 sales a year. Yeah. You do yourself.
Yeah, I've got a team of support, obviously, and you know, to the listeners out there today, I mean, I know this is called the $1 million agent, but for me, when I was meeting people who were writing those $1 million figures, it just didn't add up for my area because our area is much cheaper in commission based.
What's the average price?
Our average price at the moment is around $320,000, not millions, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I first started down this process, our average fee was $7,200 per sale. You know, which is going to shock a few of the listeners today.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you know, when I sat in rooms and I listened to people like Jason Boone and Ivan Bresic talk about, you know, so many million and all these sorts of things, it never added up in my marketplace. So what I did was I broke it down to transactions.
Right.
Because transactions are measurable across any market.
Yeah.
Commissions can vary depending
yeah.
on the, you know, obviously the sales price. So from that, my focus was just to get to 100 transactions. And then when I got to 100 transactions, then I just wanted to get to 110. When I got to 110, I wanted to do 120, you know. So for me, it was about building a system which was scalable, that I could actually list property and actually get it sold through in a shorter time period so I could take more to the market and then obviously get closer to that $1 million mark. And obviously, I'm there now, but...
So you're writing close to a million now?
Over now.
Over a million?
Now.
On average sale price, how much?
Average sale price now is still that $330 for
okay.
the last 12 months.
So, gang, you're right, because I do have a lot of people on these videos that write $1 million, but they're getting 20 grand commissions
yes.
or 15 grand commissions. So on $330,000 properties, this guy is writing with his team over $1 million in gross commission, over 100 transactions.
Yes.
Okay. Share with us some of the things that, you know, you think make you successful. What do successful agents do?
Yeah, there's two things. I think successful agents work harder than anyone else. And, you know, I've found that just if you even just go to 6 days a week, and there's a lot of people out there that will probably cringe at that, and I fought it for years, Tom, you know.
Right.
And because typically we grow up in that 9-to-5, you know, 38-hour work week. And you can work in real estate like that, but you're never going to write the numbers that you're capable of if you're working those sorts of hours. And what I found was when I looked at the best people in this industry, you know, everyone who's writing good numbers is working typically 6 days a week. You know, they're typically working 10-hour days, you know. They're back on the phones on a Monday morning, and prospecting is a huge focus. The other big thing is VPA and auction.
Okay, so I want to talk about those things, because I think if we only had 60 seconds on this interview, summarise, outwork the competition, work 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, prospect on the phones Monday, be good at getting VPA.
Yep.
You pretty much summarise it. What sort of hours do you work?
Typically I will work 6 days a week, and I'll be 10 to 14 hour days.
Starting what time?
I'm always up before 5 o'clock, about 20 to 5 I get up. I'm normally at the office by 7:30, and then I go to however long the day takes me. Saturday just gone, I was out putting signs in the ground at 6 a.m. And I didn't get home until 8 p.m. I had an appointment after all our open homes, and we had 21 open homes between my team. So it was a massive day. But you know, it's about meeting as many people as you can. So if you're asleep or you're having a day off, you're not meeting people. And I think it's about being productive and working hard while you're at work.
Yeah.
And being productive with your time there. And then when you're not at work, don't be at work. So on Sundays, I'm not at work.
Right. Okay. So your team, what does it look like? What does Andrew Sorensen team look like?
I have a buyer's agent that just works with buyers for me. That's Renee Wright. Her role within my team is to literally show as many properties as she can, negotiate offers, and she's very lucky, actually, very fortunate. She's at that position where she can negotiate the majority of the deals together, which is great. And then we pull them together at the end. And also have another assistant, which has only just come on in November. So I've been 2 odd years up to that point with one assistant. And that's Louise Greenwood. She's come on, and she now is taking care of all of my administration. So I think as you go around, you probably see that most salespeople have the same weakness, which is paperwork. And my strength is just talking to people. So now literally my day exists talking to past clients, potential clients, following up people that I've already met. I don't do any cold prospecting anymore, only people that I've met, and just managing vendors' expectations to help get price in line so we can actually get a sale together for people.
Okay, key takeaway point: work to your strengths, outsource and hire to your weaknesses.
Correct.
And that's what you're doing. You're saying that you're good at the people stuff, you're good at the crucial conversation with vendors, you're good at, you know, bringing on potential vendors close to you to list with you. And so can I ask, open houses, who goes to those?
We all do.
Yeah?
We all do. So, you know, on the weekend, just gone Saturday, each of my assistants and myself had 7 open homes each.
Right. Okay. Is it by yourself you're in an open?
Yeah, in our marketplace, we're not overloaded like Sydney. Sydney, you know, I still hear stories of 30s, 50s people through. We just had a record open for our office a weekend ago where we had 28 groups through.
So and typically have any, Andrew?
Between 5 and 10.
Right.
You know, and I'm happy with that. That's all we need.
Yeah.
But yeah, typically on a weekend, 5 to 10 through a home is good for our area.
Okay. And in terms of, like, to get to make over 100 sales, you've obviously got to get over 100 listings.
Correct.
You've got to get, you know, heaps.
Yep.
So typically you'd be listing every month, what, 10, 15?
My target's 13.
13?
My best month ever was 26.
Wow.
And they're all auction campaigns.
Is it a strong auction office?
It is now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I made the transition back in 2009 when I had a lot of stock in our marketplace and I needed a point of difference. That's actually what started me down the VPA angle. So if there's anyone out there that's looking, going, auction doesn't work in our marketplace, you can't get VPA, be careful what you're telling yourself, because that will limit your potential.
Right.
The moment I said I'm going to give it a crack, our whole marketplace shifted. I am the dominant auction office in the area.
And it's not an auction. Traditionally, it's not an auction area, is it?
It's not. So we've got one other competition up there, a Ray White office that does auctions, but they're doing a half of the volume that I do. So you know, basically what I did was just take a different option to the marketplace. And if you want to sell 100 properties, you can't use private treaty. It takes twice as long. You've got to shorten your days on market. Only way to do that is to put it on your time frame. Otherwise, you're running on a buyer's time frame, and that's typically price focused.
Right. Okay. Explain to me. Typically, your auction marketing campaigns are how many thousand? 2,000?
Look, it's all changing again. I used to, in my marketplace, have no real dramas getting between 2,000 and 3,000 per property for BPA, and that was with an average sale price of 300,000.
Yeah.
Average commission of around, at that time, around about 7.5, 7.8
yeah.
Per property. So as a percentage of the property, it was a big investment. That's changed a lot now. I think there's a lot more buyers around. I think the websites have taken a lot of that out of the print media. There's still a place for it. And also in my marketplace now, because the days on market has come down a lot, vendors don't perceive that it's as important as it once was. So my typical campaign now runs between $800 and $1,500 per property.
Okay, $800 and $1,500. Do you do on-site or in rooms?
I do on-site, yeah.
Okay. Is it three Saturdays and then you have your auction on your fourth?
Correct.
Okay. And opens during the week or just Saturdays?
Just Saturdays. I did try the opens during the week. Our area was just dead, so I just went back to weekends.
Okay. What do you like in an area that auctions is not the norm? So when we're talking about Sydney or Melbourne, in you know the capital cities, auctions the norm. People don't need to convince to go to auction. All they've got to be convinced is which agent they're going to go with auction with.
Yep.
Here, I would assume, Andrew, that you've also got to convince them to go to auction.
Correct.
Okay. Top three or four things that you can share with us about how you've been able to make the shift in a marketplace that's been non-auction.
I'm going to give all my secrets away now.
Well, all right. Share the love.
The number one thing is it's not an auction. It's a for sale with an end date.
Yeah.
Sell it before auction. Last year I listed 153 auction properties. I conducted 6 auctions on site. I sold over 100 properties.
Uh-huh. So the positioning is it's for sale with an end date, and the truth is it's up for sale from the minute you list it, and if it's not sold, this is the date.
Exactly. Right. So all you're really doing is giving an owner a blueprint, and you're giving them the opportunity to get the maximum price in the minimum time, and you're also allowing them to expose the property to as many buyers as possible without locking into a cool-off contract day one when you get that first-grade offer. And as an agent, there was many times when we get that first-grade offer and owners naturally think, well, if that's the first one, what's the next one likely to be? And it's always difficult to explain from a professional position that we should accept that offer and get some, obviously, some good results around that. Vendors always are thinking there's a little bit more there. So I've just found that the way I've adapted it in my marketplace allows a vendor to have their cake and eat it too. They have no risk taking the first offer because it still remains on the market until there's an unconditional sale. That could take a week, you might get another 2 open houses in, you might get another 20 groups through, and that's still the best offer.
Okay, so what do you say to that buyer at early stages? Are you accepting their offer until they sign the contract? Or?
Absolutely.
Right.
So it's in my book, an auction, one of the reasons we love it is it's an unconditional sale.
Right.
So a buyer will only ever, in my opinion, put their offer on the table because they're trying to beat the auction process. So if they're trying to beat the auction process, they need to have the same condition as an auction process. No subject to cool-off, no subject to pest and building or any of those sorts of things. There's the contract, put your offer forward,
conduct
your pest and building, 66W, it's done.
Okay, so for the viewers here in other states, 66W is basically the document which is the non-conditional that they get off the lawyer that says there's no cooling off period.
Correct.
Okay, so just to get my thinking right, so you're running so you basically did a handful of auctions.
Yeah, and I sold every one of those.
Right.
Under the hammer.
Okay. This to me starts to put the jigsaw together as to why you're an attraction agent, because all the profile that's coming out of these auctions must be helping you get more listing presentations and building momentum.
It's marketing's key, and this is brings it back to what you say about being an attraction agent. Before I did a lot of auctions, you don't really have a way to stand out. How do you sell ads to someone where everyone else is the same? And I think I remember going to one of your talks and you talked about the purple cow.
Yeah.
And it gets you thinking, if everyone's for sale, what are your options as an owner? Commission or price? That's what they're choosing on.
Yeah.
You see, so at least I gave them a third option, which then gave me the ability to sell marketing. Okay. And even now I sell marketing on for sale, but in the last 12 months I've only listed 2 private treaties. Everything I've listed has been auctioned. And I just find that for us it gives us a great point of difference. Most agents are too scared to have a crack at it, and if you're listening to this and you're thinking shouldn't I go auction, you probably lose the first 6 or 7 you go for. I did, and it's a time which really tests your mettle. know, and your question is this the right thing to do? Should I be doing it? Should I just do for sale? But you know, you plow through that, you get your first one, you sell that in 30 days, then you go, wow, great feeling. And then you're on to your next one. And before you know it, you're setting these new goals. Well, maybe I'll try at least 20 options this year, or 30 or 40. And before you know it, it's like, stuff this, I'll list everything option. Why do we need a for sale?
Okay, this is, gang, this is absolute gold. And I'll tell you why, because I know the area. I don't know it really well, but I know that this is a, not an auction area. I also know the demographic don't write big checks in marketing. I also know that many of the properties are similar to each other. So you can't turn around and say, oh, this is definitely an auction property because it's one in a million. So we're talking about this guy's operating in a marketplace where the houses all are the same. They're basically, if you're watching this video, you're probably the sort of person that has said, auctions don't work in my marketplace. And what is the story you're telling yourself? I think you summed it up really good. What is it you're saying to yourself about auctions that's stopping you?
Yeah, well, I had a business partner who had many years' experience in the industry, was also a qualified auctioneer.
Right.
Yet, for years, told me auctions don't work in our area. And you can't get vendor-paid marketing. It just doesn't work in our area. And then, you know, you meet, well, you get to a point where you're just sick of hearing the same crap.
Yeah.
And you've got to start to tell yourself a different story. And, you know, success does leave clues. You look about the most successful people in our industry, the majority of the stuff they're doing is more than likely auction.
Yeah.
So there is a connection there between that process and the end result. So then it's just a matter of adapting that to your area. In my area, it's not an auction under the hammer area, typically.
Right.
Okay, so I had to adapt that, and I had to work through that process to understand that that didn't work in my area. However, with a few little tweaks here and there, by listening to people like yourself and John McGrath and you know, Jason Boone and other great agents in the area, you start to go, oh, okay, I'll give that a try. And before you know it, you put your own formula together that actually works. What I do in my marketplace won't work in Double Bay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what works in Double Bay won't work in my marketplace. Same process with a couple of different variations on it.
Yeah.
And then you align it with your market. And then it's just a matter of, as with anything, you've got to find what your owners need.
Yeah.
And then if you can sell to that need, then obviously you're going to have an ability to create an attraction business.
Yeah.
Our need was nothing was selling.
Right.
You know, GFC hit 2008, same story as most of the people out there, I gather, but nothing was selling. So how do you make something stand out in a market where everything looks the same? Change your process.
Okay.
That's all I did.
Okay, this is gold. And I'm pretty sure that all this work that you're doing is probably explaining the fact that you've got an ongoing traffic of potential vendors, right? I'd like to talk a little bit about how does Andrew Sorensen get into more doors to do listing presentations?
More work. It's that simple. You know, I've got good trainers, obviously, that I've used.
You're a big believer in training?
Got to, mate.
Okay, so you're a big believer. The next thing is that you work long and hard. What's your prospecting look like? What does prospecting look like for you when I say the word prospecting?
Well, today it's a Monday. So Monday started for me at 7:30 this morning, and I've called all the buyers that I met on the weekend back by, today was about 10 o'clock. So I've done all of that. Then I have...
Do you call back their work numbers or mobiles or...
Any number.
You know,
if I don't get them, I'll leave a message. And then I'll do that again tomorrow. So I'll call all the people tomorrow that I didn't get through today.
Andrew, what's the short version of the conversation? You came through Smith Street and...
Yeah, look, it's just Andrew from Rain and Horn. Can you talk? You came through Smith Street yesterday on Saturday at our open home. Just wondering if you have any further interest in that home. Yes or no, and then you just take a conversation from there, obviously, and every conversation is slightly different, and there's a number of variations on that technique.
Do you do the callbacks or your buyer's agent?
We all do, because I think it's important, and you know, when we make those calls, I just want to be first.
Right.
You know, I want to be first to make that contact, because that buyer may be a seller, they may be going to other opens. At the moment, we're dealing with a lot of investors, and I think, you know, people respect hard work, and they like people to be keen for their business. So even if they're buying off of someone else, a lot of the time I'm picking up the leasing side of things, the management for their property.
Right.
Because we're keen, we're professional, we're there first. When half the time in our area, the other agents don't ring. Because there's that much abundance of people around, they know they're going to sell a house eventually, so why do they need to make a call?
Right.
You know, so I just think it's an attitude about are you working today or are you building a business for tomorrow? And for me, I've always been about building that business for tomorrow, so it's about the relationship. So when you talk about what's my prospecting look like, I don't do cold prospecting anymore. The only people I talk to are people I've already met face-to-face.
Okay, and most of those would be people from open houses?
Open houses, past clients, referrals from people that I've sold for or that bought through me, or I manage their property, landlords, people I meet at the shops. You know, you walk around just with a, you know, Rain and Horn logo on and they, oh, are you that guy? Or, and obviously profile through the newspaper and things like that, people start to recognise the name as well. But I've been doing this 10 years now, so it's sort of all happening in the last fall when the profile started to build through the auction profiles.
Right. Okay. Vendor management with all your listings being auction listings, do you send them a report or do you have face-to-face meetings? How do you manage vendors throughout?
Yeah, it's amazing. It changes over the years. When I first started, my goal was to have 4 auctions a month.
Right.
So I could do the face-to-face meetings and all those things. And then before you know it, I got ahead of myself and I was listing 8 a month. And then I was like, oh, crap, I can't keep up this amount of contact. So now what I do is pretty straightforward. Obviously, you call them after every inspection. That goes without saying, be it private treaty or auction. Each Thursday, I'll catch up with them on the phone for a brief chat, no longer than 2, maybe 3 minutes, depending on their needs. And I'll just talk about what's happening with the property, how many inspections they've had, how many second inspections, how many contracts are issued, any offers, positive, negative, and then a bit of a roadmap as to where to from here. And I do that every Thursday. That goes out in a written format as well, so they've got it on record, and then I can refer back to that in the next conversation. So from the weekend, I have a couple of properties that I didn't auction, I withdrew. From today, we're already negotiating on that. But we knew which price we're going to be at, because all the way through, we're just listening to the buyer feedback, communicating that through to the owner. And I believe as an agent, it's our job to be in the middle. We're a mediator. I don't become emotionally involved in any of my clients' properties. And I believe that gives us the ability to be real factual and just straight to the point. It's not that it was raining that no one came through your open house, because we had people through your other properties that were on the market the same day. It's literally your price, or it's your presentation, or it's the position. You know what I mean?
So, are you good at vendor management?
I think so.
So you're comfortable being detached and not getting caught up in that, you know, emotional conversation, which I think a lot of people, Andrew, they're too scared to tell vendors the truth.
Well, that's why they hire us, Tom. They hire us because we're not as close as they are. So when that great offer comes in, we don't panic. You know, we manage it and we get the very best price that we can. Or when there is no offer, we're very straight up with them as to what we need to change in order to get an offer. And if the offer comes in below the owner's expectations, which we've all been in that situation, our job is not to so much worry about the mortgage and all the other things which are their worries. Our job is to just cut straight down the centre and say this is how it is, so that they know what their options are. If they know their options, they'll make the decisions that we need them to make.
Right.
Be it sell, or be it take it off the market, revisit it in 6 months.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times we have that, you know, in our area. There was times there where we did go through an auction process. We did get ample people through. We did get offers, but they were $30,000 or $40,000 below what the owners could physically get out of their mortgage for. So in that case, the best advice is, you know what, we tried, let's take it off the market. We don't want a damaged price, let's revisit it in 12 months. Now, those people come back to you in 12 months because you've given them the right advice.
Right.
You have a second crack at it, you clear it through, and then everyone's happy.
Okay. So, Andrew, we're covering a lot of things that, and you've been very open explaining, you know, your process about auction, having an expiry date and your vendor management. So a lot of the what and hows, you have covered it, and you're going to cover it more at ARIC as well. But you can show someone what to do, you can show them someone how to do it, but you can't make them want to do it. You obviously work hard. You work 6 days a week, you work long hours from what you just said. So your want, your motivation level is high.
I love it. I'm passionate about this industry. You know, I get annoyed when I see people that are in our industry but just treat it with disregard. You know, we're so lucky and we're so fortunate.
What, when you say lucky, why is that? Tell me what you...
The incomes that we can make. I don't have a tertiary education. But there's doctors out there that can't make the money that we can in our industry. And I'm in a regional area. You know, I'm not in a city area where there's, you know...
Well, I mean, what were you doing before real estate? I'm curious.
I ran a Toys R Us store.
Right.
Before that, I worked in a family business as a mechanic.
Okay, so, I mean, this is exciting. Mechanic to million-dollar agent at a Toys R... What is it, Toys R Us?
Toys R Us. I managed a Toys R Us store for 3 years.
Right. Okay, so you're saying you got to have an attitude of gratitude for the fact that real estate, you should be grateful for real estate, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, people here with little education, no university qualifications, can be making $500,000 a year.
It's possible. The only thing that holds you back is either your commitment or your skill set. So fix either one of those two or both and you've got a great career.
Well, let's talk on the commitment. Have you always been motivated?
I've always been motivated and I love to win. But in a real estate sense, no.
Right.
We talk about that moment that you have that changes everything. For me, it was Melbourne Cup Day 2008 at Terrigal Beer Garden.
Right.
Not too far away from here where we are.
Yeah.
Terrigal. And I remember that day, it was the GFC hit around that time, if you recall. Interest rates dropped some 2% that day. This area here was all entry-level pricing in that 200 to 400 sort bracket. I had 113 listings on my books that I couldn't sell because no one was buying. And they doubled the first home buyer grants and all those things. And I remember thinking, you know, if I'm going to be good at this, if I'm going to have a crack, it doesn't get any better. But all this stock, but all these incentives in my marketplace, I just got to work hard. And that was the day. And from that day on, non-stop commitment. I did work, and people out there aren't going to like to hear this, I worked 7 days a week for 2 years to clear through that. And I learned a lot, worked hard, and I started to get ahead of things, you know, get some mortgage debts paid off and all those sorts of things. But it was a lot of commitment, but you know, you're kidding yourself if you think you just put on an assistant and hey, now you're writing big bucks. You've actually got to build that pipeline first so you're at capacity, and then you need the assistant. And then a lot of the people I saw who put on assistants, they actually then back off because they think, oh, we've got someone else now. You've actually then got to go double hard. So then you're both at capacity. When you get up to capacity, that's when you can actually back off. Okay, so I work 7 days a week. 2 years, worked my absolute backside off. I only had, you know, the basic public holidays off that year, well, those 2 years. Then when I got my assistant, Renee, she was brilliant, and I got lucky there, and I got really lucky there. She's brilliant. But she allowed me to then go to the next level. So all I then had to do was focus on listing, and she focused on selling, and she's quite capable. So then I was able to double the amount of listings I could bring on. So then you work extra hard again, but then when you change it to an auction, you're then planning. So I could plan to have time off.
Yeah.
So the first year when I had an assistant, I actually dropped back after about 3 or 4 months once we figured out how we both worked together, because it's all new to me. No one in my area has had an assistant before. I had no one to go to. Just great people like Jason Boone, who I'll be forever indebted to.
He's just a nice person.
You know? And then... when we backed off, after about 3 months, I was able to back off and take Sundays off. You know, so I got back to 6 days a week and still be strategic about your holidays. Like, take a long weekend around Easter, you know, and I was still building the business, you see. And then that year, I actually was able to have 3 weeks off at Christmas. The second year we worked together, still doing the same, 6 days a week, I had 5 weeks off across the year. And my business partner retired and I had a lot of restructuring, so the last 12 months I haven't had as much time off, but now with an extra assistant again and that structure of just options coming through, you're working in cycles all the time, so you can actually plan and structure your time off as well as your listing cycles. And you're forced to, because a private treaty comes on, and then when does it sell?
Yeah.
When it sells. An auction comes on, when does it sell? And it's selling in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
If I haven't sold it in 6, it's not saleable. See you later.
Yeah.
And that's how I was able to structure a better time off for me and a better work-life balance. But, you know, I interview people. People come to me looking for work now and wanting to join us. And I think one of the best questions I can ask them is, what do you think real estate is? I think a lot of people think real estate is driving around in a flash car and in other people's houses and making mega bucks. It's a lot of hard work that goes into it before you're even close to that level, you know. And I think people just need to be realistic. It's all good and well learning little things that I can possibly teach you today or that you'll learn, and you go into training courses all the time and tell people what to do, but knowing what to do and actually doing it are two different things.
Yeah.
But there is no supplement for hard work, because if you're not doing the work, it doesn't matter what's up here.
Yeah.
You still got to pick up the phone and start that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was Melbourne Cup Day 2008. That's when it started for me. And I wanted to source out the best people in the industry and shamelessly copy them, because you don't need to reinvent the wheel. But yeah, credit where credit's due, when when I get the opportunity to give credit, I do. And just build my business from there. And all the successful people in our industry follow that same formula.
Okay, Andrew, I'm really hoping the way you've gone through that 3-minute conversation just then, I'm hoping that Melbourne Cup 2008 is for someone, when they're watching this on their iPhone, on the sofa, or if they're in their office watching it at one of their sales meetings, I'm really hoping that it's their Melbourne Cup 2008, that it's the day that they rewrite their agreement with reality and turn around and say, you know, enough of this bullshit story. What I'm going to basically do is I'm going to stop, like, to me, what you've said is you stop dabbling. I'm in 120%.
Yep.
It's not just, you know, you really got, you know, absolutely committed in it. And I'm really hoping that that's the case. Andrew, one final question. If you were getting into real estate 12 years ago, knowing what you know today, what advice would Andrew Sorensen give Andrew Sorensen about real estate?
Be careful taking advice from people that know less than you do.
Okay. I like that. I like that. I've actually said once on social media, beware of listening to the agent who's never listed or sold, the marriage counsellor on their 10th divorce, the financial planner who's broke that makes money out of selling people financial courses, or the overweight personal trainer.
I like that.
It's true.
You know, there's many people out there that want to offer advice, but I've just learned that go to the people that already do it, you know, and then you get to take shortcuts.
Yeah.
And they're not shortcuts in a bad way. It's just, you know, I've made so many mistakes, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, so I've got a new recruit who I actually gave a job offer to today, and Adrian will be joining us hopefully in about 3 weeks' time. And he knows nothing about our industry, but, you know, what I've learned in the last 4 years, I can condense down into 12 months for a new recruit.
How lucky is that? How lucky is this guy?
It's just amazing. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, be careful taking advice from people that know less than you, because you've got to try things for a period of time before you know that they're not working.
Yeah.
You can't just try it for a week and go, oh, auctions don't work.
Yeah.
You know, and if I had given up by the seventh auction that I lost,
yeah,
I definitely wouldn't be here having a chat with you here today, or, you know, being in a position where I get to speak at ARIC. Like, that's a...
Oh, mate.
It's a massive, massive thing in my career.
Oh, well, I've got to tell you, you've been well selected. You've got he's a guy that his audio meets his video. He walks his talk. He's going to speak at ARIC. He's on social media, so send him a note when you've seen this video. Andrew Sorensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.